Reading. Our last argued case this morning is Lowe versus Shield Mark, 2021-2164. Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Ray Weber, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant plaintiffs. First issue that I do want to address is the grant of a summary judgment of non-infringement based on an erroneous claim construction, primarily of the term lateral edge portion. The claims, which is where you need to start in construing claims, clearly defines lateral edge portion. At column 5, lines 15 to 34 of the 664 patent, the lateral edge portion is defined in detail as a portion. It's a portion of the body of the floor marking tape. It's positioned at the lateral edges. It extends in the lateral direction. It has an upper surface. That upper surface comprises an extension of the upper surface of the body. It has a lower surface of each lateral edge portion being a flat coplanar extension of the lower surface of the body. It says that the entire body of each lateral edge portion is tapered with the upper surface of each lateral edge portion extending to the lower surface of such lateral edge portion. And it says that each of the lateral edge portions has a maximum height that is less than its width, and that means that it's less than a 45-degree angle. It's hard to imagine a claim feature being defined with more particularity and specificity than lateral edge portion. But if the claims aren't enough, then we go to the specification, we go to the prosecution history, and all of those are consistent with each other. The claims state that the body of the floor marking tape has...
You're concerned with the use of the term shoulder, right?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. In fact, as I'll mention shortly, or maybe now, but the shoulder and the recess were part of the parent patent of the patent here in issue. You know, the patent here in issue speaks of a number of configurations or embodiments, and each one of those configurations or embodiments addresses a different problem in the prior art. And it corrects that problem in the prior art. And they are independent of each other. And in the parent patent of the patent
well,
here.
I thought you argued in your brief, you objected to the term shoulder. Are you changing your argument now? And you say absolutely not, that's not a critical issue?
Well, it's a critical issue in that it has no relevance to the 664 patent. The shoulder and the recess were claimed extensively in the parent patent. They were claimed in patent 883290, which is at appendix 1753 through 58. That's the parent of this. That patent addressed the issue of adhesive ooze. What happens if a skid steer or something runs over this tape? We don't want the adhesive squirting out. And so the fix for that was to have shoulders and a recess and maintain the adhesive within the shoulders and recess so that it doesn't squirt out. That has absolutely...
But aren't the shoulders a necessary or a reasonable part of defining lateral edge portion?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I just went through how the patent exhaustively describes the lateral edge portion. You don't need the shoulder. If you look at the parent patent and the 664 patent here an issue, they're almost identical, except the parent patent focuses on solving the problem of adhesive ooze and therefore extensively claims shoulders and a recess. The 664 patent is directed to resolving the problem of skids or pallets hitting this tape and having a tendency to tear it from the floor. And so lateral edge portions are provided with these tapered edges at less than a 45 degree angle that are at the far lateral ends of the tape, so that the skids or the pallets will go up over the tape, and it thereby limits the tendency of those machines or those apparata from stripping the tape from the floor.
How do you respond to the lower court's conclusion that the claims would be overly vague without the use of shoulders to mark their boundaries?
I would say that with all due respect, the lower court really didn't even look in detail at the claims. If you look at the hearing on the Markman hearing, the court focused on the summary of the invention in the 664 patent and said, oh, well, the heart of this is the preventing adhesive ooze, and you really need shoulders to do that. That where those lateral edge portions are is independent of where the shoulders might be. And you can have a tape without the recess or shoulders that'll have these tapered lateral edges that will provide you with the benefit previously unavailable in the prior art of tapered lateral edges. By the same token, you could have a tape that doesn't have the lateral edges, but has the recess, and shoulders to hold the adhesive. That solves the totally unrelated problem of adhesive ooze. You can combine both of those in one tape, but that's not what these claims do. The 664 patent focuses on the lateral edge portion, and only in dependent claim 7, I believe, does it mention, you know, containing the adhesive. But
counsel, I'd like you to address the dismissal of the invalidity counterclaim, and particularly the covenant not to sue.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. This is not the first time we've been sued by Shieldmark. We were sued by Shieldmark previously, and we won on summary judgment, non-infringement. Shieldmark went back. They've kept a continuing patent application since 2003. They went back and they got new claims that didn't have the limitations that allowed us to escape infringement in the first patent. So that patent, that suit was dismissed because we didn't infringe, but we had a count in there for invalidity and unenforceability because Shieldmark, well prior to the critical date of any of their three and soon to be four patents issuing from the same application,
wasn't there a lack of case of controversy anymore when you got the covenant not to sue and you changed your product?
No, there still is a case or controversy because we don't have any assurance they won't sue us on the next patent that issues from this. And that patent also, as Learned Hand, you know, said, remains, you know, as you know, a threat against the entire industry.
Case doesn't continue just because someone may sue you in the future. You need a present case of controversy.
Well, according to MedImmune, you have to look at all the circumstances, which is something that the district court did not do.
Do you have any case, Mr. Weber, in which the party that is trying to keep the case alive, the declaratory judgment plaintiff, is relying on the possibility that a patent may issue when that patent has not yet issued and on which that part of the declaratory plaintiff might be sued?
Well, we have the one that we're in right now because
that doesn't really help you because it's not precedent yet. Do you have any case that fits the pattern that you've described as creating the case or controversy?
Judge Bryson, I don't recall. None comes to mind. If it did come to mind, it would be in our brief.
Right.
But that is indeed, when you look at all the circumstances, as MedImmune says, we've got a situation here where we've been sued by them before. We went back, they got a continuing application, they get another patent from the same application, they sue us again. This covenant not to sue only extends to the 220 patent, not the next patent that they're going to get and they're going to sue us with. Plus, this is a scourge on this industry. They sold 4 miles of tape, 4 miles of it, of tape that's actually identified in their specification as an acceptable alternative before the critical date.
Mr. Weber, does Insight plan to continue selling the Superior Mark tape, which was the subject, I guess, of the 220 patents counterclaim?
They certainly did, Your Honor. Their desire
do they in the future plan to sell the Superior Mark tape? My understanding was there was some question as to whether that tape would be substituted for by a different product.
It would only be substituted if we were found to infringe and if the patent was found to be valid and enforceable. That was our go-to.
Okay.
That we would get rid of the release liner, which was an element of their claim.
But you're not going to do that until and unless there is an adjudication against you.
That would be our desire, yes. I mean, we may likely offer both. But this was not our desire. You know, they're all of a sudden confronted with a very meritorious, I mean, we're at the end of this case. Summary judgment motions have been filed. They know we're quoting their expert from the previous case who says they violated the no new matter rule. We're citing to the depositions that are all taken in that case that sold, they said they sold over 4 miles of this tape before they filed, before the critical date. And all of a sudden, they couldn't wait to bring this patent into this suit. They brought it into the suit as soon as it issued. But
Counselor, you're well into your rebuttal time.
Can I ask one more question?
You guys got to do me a favor.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, I have one question before you sit down or verbally sit down.
Okay.
Do you at least agree that the covenant not to sue means there's no case or controversy with respect to the 220 patent? Like if we just talk about that context, do you agree with that statement?
Having not given that careful consideration, I would say that it certainly sounds right, Your Honor, that there's no case or controversy there. Well, there is the controversy again. That these patents, you know, what they have been able to do is they've gone out and used these patents as scarecrows, and they've signed up the entire industry who's licensed under them, and so Mr. Lowe has all of these competitors out there that he's fighting with, and all of a sudden they see their patents circling the drain because of the inequitable conduct clearly practiced, admitted to by their prior expert.
We're not involved in inequitable conduct at this point. So why don't we hear from Mr. Megley, and we'll restore about 3 minutes of your rebuttal time.
Well, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Magley.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Richard Magley on behalf of the appellees, Shieldmark, Advanced Plastic, and Crown Equipment. I'd like to start with the 664, the patent that was asserted against my clients. The dispositive issue is whether or not a flat bottom tape, a tape that admittedly has a single flat lower surface, can infringe any claims of the 664 patent. And the district court properly concluded that there were two reasons why it couldn't. And I want to address the first one, which is lateral edge portion. There are actually, and the district court construed it consistently with the other language in the claims and the specification and prosecution history. And there are actually two claim limitations that really are implicated. There's the lower surface of the lateral edge portion, and then there's the lower surface of the tape body. And those are two separate and distinct claim limitations. In fact, the appellants at page 20 of their principal brief acknowledge that the claim distinguishes between the lower surface of the body and the lower surface of each lateral edge portion. So that means there must be some demarcation point where the lower surface of the tape body ends and the lower surface of the lateral edge portion begins. And the only disclosure in the specification where the spec says the invention is what's shown in the figures shows a shoulder defining that demarcation point where one ends and the other begins.
Mr. Magley, what about the description of a lateral edge as being that portion of the bottom of the tape or the tape that is tapered, which is set out pretty clearly as a definition of the lateral edge?
The problem with that, Your Honor, is there's nothing in the claims or the specification that says only the lateral edge portion is the tapered portion. Claim says the entire tapered edge or lateral edge is tapered, but it doesn't exclude the possibility that the central body portion, the upper surface, has part that's tapered. So you can't
if it has a portion that is tapered, then it becomes part of the lateral edge, according to the definition of lateral edge as being the tapered portion, right?
Well, but you can't, and the tapered part is only on the upper surface, not the lower surface.
I understand, but that defines the lateral edge for purposes of trying to figure out what portion of the tape counts as one of the lateral edges.
But if the problem is there's the claim, the specs leave the possibility that not only the lateral edge is tapered, but the central body portion is tapered. And so if both of those different components are tapered, there's no way to tell where the tape body ends and the lateral edge portion begins if the only way you're telling is by the tapered portion, because the taper can extend into the central body portion and into the tape body and extend outside the lateral edge portion. So you can't tell when the lateral edge portion begins and the central body portion ends based on the taper. And the drawings, all the figures that define the invention show the demarcation point being that shoulder.
What do you do with the claim differentiation problem with claim 7 that says that claim 1 is narrowed to a situation where you have the recess? The body defines a recess. That seems to define the shoulder embodiment. Why doesn't that suggest that claim 1 is not limited to a shoulder related embodiment?
Because the claim 7 also adds the requirement that the adhesive is disposed in the recess. So our position would be you might have a shoulder, but it may not be deep enough to hold the adhesive.
So you're saying that the claim 1 reads on and only on tape that has a shoulder but no adhesive inside the shoulder?
Well, it's a claim differentiation, so claim 7 would be narrower, so it could read on both.
But your argument is that claim 1 only covers a product that has a shoulder.
To be more precise, if I wasn't before, Your Honor, our argument is claim 1 requires shoulders to act as for cabining the adhesive and to act as a demarcation point where.
Well, if that's true, then you've just explained why it is that claim 7 covers exactly those, the shoulder
The adhesive doesn't necessarily have to be disposed completely in the recess. In other words, the recess could be, you could have a shoulder that's not big enough to hold the adhesive or all of it. And so claim 1 is broader in the sense that it could hold all the adhesive or could hold just part of it, still act as cabin a little bit, stop the oozing out, but it's not big enough to have it completely disposed in it. So that's the difference.
What about the related 290 patent that your opposing counsel talked about? Now, that patent, it mentioned shoulders and the claims and the like. Can you just speak to that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's two differences. First of all, one thing I'd like to point out, counsel had tried to argue that the 290 patent is really related only to the oozing out. But the 290 patent, all claims expressly have a beveled requirement. So that the claims show that it's related. The invention is really both. It's the combination of a beveled requirement and this shoulder configuration that I call it. Number two, in the 290 patent, lateral edge portion does not appear. The claim term is lateral edges. It's not lateral edge portion. So the claim lateral edge portion doesn't appear in the 290 patent. And finally, I think important thing is during prosecution of the 664 patent, there was a non-statutory double patenting rejection. And we've always recognized it's an obvious enough double patenting rejection. And it was rejected based over the parent, the 290 patent, and a reference called blank. And there were two important things. What they did is they filed a terminal disclaimer. And in the Simple Air versus Google case, this court said that's a strong clue that there's no patentable distinction between the parent claims and the child claims. So our position is that's a strong clue that the 664 patent not only has this tapered requirement, but it has this cabin of the adhesive requirement as well. And one final point on that is if you look at the blank reference, BLANK, that was the secondary reference, and I'm referring to appendix page 1727. And what the patent office said about blank is it had flat, they had longitudinal dams on the bottom surface, and that was to reduce the flow of adhesive. So even the patent office, in examining the claims of the 664 patent, said there's got to be some structure on the lower surface that acts to cabin the adhesive. Now, maybe broader than a recess defined by shoulders that can basically have the adhesive completely disposed in it. But there has to be some structure because the invention is the combination of the structure on the bottom cabinating the adhesive and these beveled edges. And so that we think is further support that the district court's construction, where you need some demarcation point, that the invention includes cabining the adhesive, and you also need some demarcation point where the lower surface of the tape body ends and the lower surface of the lateral edge portion begins, because otherwise there's no other way to tell that.
Now, Mr. Could you turn, if you're done with this, could you turn to the issue of the 220 patent?
Yes,
Let me ask you a question before you start. Your covenant not to sue, as I understand it, is a covenant not to sue for either past or present infringement. As I understand it, you are not covenanting. Well, you tell me, are you covenanting not to sue for any of the superior mark tape that may be made, used, or sold in the future?
Yes, Your Honor, and that
you are covenanting. You're saying you are not going to sue in the future on superior mark tape.
I think that's taken care of by the dismissal with prejudice.
No. I want to know about your covenant. Are you promising? If you say it's covered by the dismissal without prejudice, are you promising that you will not sue for future sales, manufacturers, or uses of the superior mark tape?
The answer to that question, Your Honor, is for the superior mark tape that was accused in the case.
Yes.
And here's the reasons why. It relates to dismissal, but it also relates to the covenant. The covenant is at Appendix 1409. And the covenant not to sue, there's a lot of focus on the first paragraph, but the second paragraph says we're also covenanting that we're going to dismiss with prejudice our infringement claim. So what? And we did that. We dismissed it with prejudice. So once there's that dismissal, there's claim preclusion that applies on the accused product.
Well, that's a question. That's a question, because the claim preclusion, typically at least, only applies to products that are in existence, are now, are in the past. Doesn't cover future torts. Now, if you are conceding, and I think I hear you saying that you are conceding, that whether through the covenant or through your understanding of the effect of the dismissal without prejudice, that you will not sue on Insight and Lowe on the Superior Mark tape in the iteration that it has at present, then I'm satisfied that you've given up any future right to sue on that. But I want to be crystal clear on that because I think it's important. There's a case called Revolution Eyewear in which this, you may be familiar with it, in which this court said that if you're not promising not to sue for future sales or sales of products that are made in the future, then that is not good enough to defeat subject matter jurisdiction for a declaratory judgment.
Let me, and I'll be extremely precise with this, that's an excellent question. What our understanding is for the Superior Mark tape, which is the tape that was at issue in the lawsuit, they can sell that through the end of the life of the patent. So any sales from the past, any sales tomorrow, all the way till the patent expires.
Including Superior Mark tape that they have not yet manufactured, but is manufactured to the specifications of the current Superior Mark tape, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, if in 6 months from now, and I think the patent, by the way, expires in about 18 months, if in 6 months from now they come out with a completely new product, but decide to call it Superior Mark version 2, and it's a completely different product, our position wouldn't be under the covenant.
Of course. I understand.
But we're talking about the product that they've had, that they've been calling Superior Mark, that was the subject of the lawsuit, yes.
Okay.
They're until the end of the life of the patent.
All right.
Thank you.
I have one more question on the 664 before you. I got the impression you're getting a wrap. You look like you had that look on your face, which is an okay look to have. What about the fact that there are those configurations? And I think the configurations or embodiments in that patent only talk about shoulders or recesses for maybe two of them. Can you address that point in particular? Do you know what I'm referring to? I assume you do.
I think if you're referring to, are you referring to the drawings or are you referring to the specification where it talks about a configuration of the invention?
The specification where it talks about like five configurations and then
right. Column one, at the bottom of column one.
Right. And again, and I think that if you look at Donovan's spec and the prosecution history, but specifically, it's the brief summary of the invention and everyone they say in one configuration of the invention. And so our reading of that, which I think is consistent with the other portion of the spec and the claims and the prior patent and terminal disclaimer, is those aren't separate embodiments and each one being an invention. That is like an aspect. I would use it as the word aspect of the invention, because if you look at the claims, you look at the 290 parent patent, and you look at what's shown in all the figures that they describe as the invention is a combination of structure on the bottom that acts as that demarcation point, that cabins.
Just to clarify, so you're saying you don't equate configuration with embodiment here? You're saying
no,
that?
And okay. And the reason, another important reason why is if you look down, so they use the word configuration, and then if you look at column one, roughly at line 55, they say in one embodiment, the structure is a shoulder that defines a recess that holds the bulk of the adhesive. And again, I think that's what you're getting into with claim 7, is the bulk of the adhesive. So, but that shows you they didn't use, there they used embodiment when they wanted to use embodiment. They didn't use, say in one embodiment, they used configuration. So I think that indicates, the only reasonable reading of that is indicates that there's a difference between embodiment and configuration. They weren't using configuration to indicate an embodiment. And so, Judge Cunningham, I hope I answered your question.
Well, three lines down from the reference to configuration is the language in one embodiment.
Correct.
Presumably an embodiment of that configuration. It's in the same paragraph. Isn't that the reference to embodiment that you were saying was missing?
Right. And so what I'm saying is, again, there's a configuration of the invention. And so then one embodiment, and I guess that dovetails right into what I was saying about claim 1 and claim 7. So claim 1 is talking about the configuration that has this, you know, that the recess that is retaining the entire adhesive. And then it said in one embodiment, it can hold the bulk of the adhesive.
Right.
So that's
well,
really what we're talking about, saying seven.
Are you saying then that the language in one embodiment, the structure is a shoulder, dot, 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 is, it looks to the casual reader, at least, as if that's the implication of that is that another embodiment does not contain a shoulder. But you're saying that the two embodiments are the ones with a shoulder that either retain the bulk of the adhesive or do not? Is that your position?
Or may not retain the bulk of the adhesive. They may retain the adhesive, but not the bulk.
That's what I was saying. All right,
yes.
That's your distinction?
Yes.
Okay.
Particularly where you have the on column two, it says figure one is a cross-section of the tape of the invention, cross-section. And then you look at figure one and it shows the shoulder that acts as that demarcation point. So the only way to consistently read through all that is to say configuration isn't referring to embodiments. It's referring to a, what I would say is an aspect.
Any final thought, Mr. Megley?
No, Your Honor, unless the court has any further questions, we'll rest on our briefs and the points we've made here today.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. You have 3 minutes for rebuttal. And you need to unmute.
There we go. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm in my 50th year of doing this, and I've always learned and I've always adhered to the fact that claims claim and specifications teach. You don't read extraneous limitations from the specification into the claims. Whether it's a configuration, whether it's called an embodiment, whether those two are intermixed, at least to me, I didn't write the patent, but at least I know who did, and at least to me, and I believe to him, those are different, and if you, or I mean, those are the same, and if you want to know what's claimed, go to the claims. That's the reason you should go to the claims of the 290 patent, the parent, and go to the claims of the 664 patent and see that both independent claims, which are 1 and 11 in both patents, start out tracking each other and then go totally separate ways. One focusing on adhesive ooze and what are we going to do about it, and that's the 290 patent, and the other one focusing on the tendency to lift or tear and trying to limit that, and that's the 664 patent with the tapered edges. And Mr. Megley, I think misspoke a little bit when he said, you know, the tapered edges were in the claims that I referenced in the 290 patent. If you look at 290 patent claims 1 and 11, they say that starting off, they talk about a body, the body having a pair of lateral edges disposed in the longitudinal direction. Lateral edges, it doesn't say anything more about the lateral edges for the entire rest of the claim. It's just there to get you the feel for the structure. But there's more to this covenant not to, to the issue of the 220 patent than this covenant not to sue. And I'd like to be heard on that. MedImmune again says, look at all the circumstances. Look at the prejudice to Lowe. Yeah, Mr. Lowe may be able to continue to make a product that he has every right to make because he designed around their earlier patents and all and gave them a roadmap how to sue him again. But it's impeding the entire market. This whole market, consumers are not given the opportunity to have these things at fair or decent prices. You know, there's prejudice to Lowe, there's prejudice to the market. And this isn't and there's no stated reason for the dismissal that was ever given by Mr. Megley, either today or in any of his briefing. The only reason was, well, we looked at the volumes of sales and it wasn't worth it. Well, you should have known that when you filed suit against us immediately upon that patent issuing. And that's not really a justifiable reason. And the litigation was near its end. We'd done briefing. We'd done all of our positions. We'd done our discovery, and we had done summary judgment motions.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. This argument is also at an end. We wish you many more than 50 years of practice, but this case is submitted.
All right. Thank you.
The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.